Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the coolest new way to fix your bike. RunCatalina.com, Catalina Island Marathon, the 40th anniversary coming up on Saturday, March 11th. The Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can check us out on iTunes, on Babbittville.com, subscribe to our Endurance World newsletter. Our next guest, one of our favorite people on the planet Earth. He's a four-time Olympian, Olympic silver medalist in the marathon from 2004, 2009, a New York City Marathon champion, 2014 Boston Marathon champion, the one, the only, Meb Keflezighi. Meb, how the heck are you?
Hey, Bob, thanks for having me again. It's wonderful always to revisit with you and the amazing supporters and fans that we have over in San Diego and everywhere else. So I'm doing well.
Awesome. So you are entering your, basically your final season as an elite marathon guy. And what are the plans? Will it be Boston, New York, and then that'll be curtain call?
Absolutely. Boston in April. So happy to do that. And then finish up in New York City Marathon, where I started my first marathon in 2002 in New York, where it was such a painful experience.
Yeah.
At the end, and I don't think I would ever want to do another marathon where I said first and last, I never want to do this ever again. And I just didn't know it was going to be 15 years later and 25 marathons later that I'm going to come back and conclude a New York City marathon. So looking forward to the 2017 and two more marathons. That'll be the total of 26 marathons for my career. And I'll be 42 years old next year. And I think in kilometers, that's the last time I checked, that's a marathon. And good time to stop.
It's time. You know, what's really cool is the fact that you've been doing this for so long. I mean, a lot of guys have run way more marathons during that same type of a period of time. And I think you've really kept the marathons under control. And because it would have been easy to chase the appearance fees, and you could have gotten a lot of appearance fees, especially after winning in New York, to just running 2-3 marathons a year. But you stayed away from that. Was that hard to do, knowing that, boy, I tell you, there's a lot of cash out there?
Yeah, I mean, most people say that you have 4 marathons in your career or 2 marathons in your career, but I believe in the key to success is preparation. As I talk about my book, Meb for Mortals, all the training drills, all the things that I do. But it's just the longevity. I had had so many great mentors and coaches my career, starting with Dick Lord, finding out in seventh grade that was my God-given talent, and Ed Ramos in high school, and Ron Tabb guided me a little bit in high school, and then my mentor Bob Larson from UCLA for a long time. And so, you know, when I try to compete, honestly, you know, I thought, if I didn't have a chance, I'd win. And the only time I felt I didn't have a chance of winning was at Chicago, my second marathon. I wanted to chase 2:12 for the Olympic A standard. Other than that, every marathon that I entered, it was for a win. And, you know, you have to prepare and believe that you can do it. And so I didn't follow the money, fortunately. And my career has been elongated for a long time, and it's been very consistent. In fact, that at Ron Meb, my Twitter, I put all the 24 marathons results, and they're I'm pretty proud of it. I had one DNF, which I did not finish. But other than that, I put it up there, and I felt my preparation was ready to get me to that finish line of 26.2 journey. And sometimes you hit it out of the ballpark or the resume that you mentioned earlier, and other times you struggle, but that's what life is. And marathon is a great metaphor for life, through ups and downs and challenges. And I've been very fortunate, and now is kind of looking forward to my next chapter of life. after concluding my marathon career at the end of the year.
So how have you had to change? Because like you said, 41 years old, and this year you qualified for your fourth Olympic team, you're second at the Olympic marathon trials, obviously still running at an elite level, and even at the Olympic marathon, at halfway you were still right there with the group and had some stomach issues, threw up, what, seven times. But you've obviously had to adapt to age. How have you done that?
Well, age is a number, but right. At the same time, you definitely feel the effect. And for me, is as I alluded earlier in the book, more details, Metamortals. But what I do is just stretch. You have to stretch a lot more. Whereas before, hey, give me 5 minutes. You see my teammates at UCLA. I said, we're going to go for a run, or do you want to meet up? And I'm like, yeah, give me 5 minutes. 5 minutes to change, put your shorts and shirts on, and put your shoes on and ready to go. But I can't do that now. I mean, I have to wake up and wait an hour at least before I go for a run, and it might be an hour run or an hour and 20-minute run, but the process of getting ready is at least an hour. You know, have a toast. Nutritionally, you have to change your perception of food, energy, and do the foam rolling, eat something, and while it digests, do stretching, and you know, it takes about 6-7 minutes. To do some of the ligaments and muscle movement that I do, you know, and before I leave the house, and then stretch afterwards, do the drills afterward. The run itself is easy, you know, but how you do the small things that kind of usually end up being a big impact in your career or racing. I didn't, like Boston 2014, if I didn't do all those drills and core workouts and sit-ups and mechanics, nutrition, all the sacrifice that you do add up to be big things, and that's what it was in the difference. And now even making the Olympic team, I mean, I talk about even my book, Run to Overcome, I discuss that, you know, I used to drink 32 ounces of water before I eat dinner just to tease my stomach that I'm full.
Right.
So you don't eat a lot because, you know, you have to, you know, you want to be a runner, and runners are usually, you know,
light. Yes.
Have a form, and, you know, sometimes you might have the metabolism to eat a lot, but at the same time, you have to be careful and pay attention to nutrition and drills and mileage and cross training. You know, cross training with my Elliptigo has been amazing.
Yes.
An awesome time, just because, you know, it's not about running and putting the 130, 136 miles before, but now I try to put 100, 120 and cross training for 8 hours. A week, or sometimes more, 5 times a week. I'm doing riding for an hour and a half to 2 hours. So it's all about kind of figuring out. You become your own science almost. What works, what doesn't work, both training, cross training, nutrition, and the recovery. And recovery is important, whether it's massage or therapy or therapeutic electronic stimulators. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a literally 24/7 job, and there's no weekends, there's no holidays. As
no.
You know,
yep.
We used to see each other
Thanksgiving morning.
You got to get that running before everybody try to get involved with the family events, and you got to do it, you know, really, really early, and you have to sacrifice a lot, whether it's sleep, whether it's nutrition, whether it's, you know, all those time and altitude training. So I just, but at the same time, you know, definitely was fear of success, fear of failure, meaning that I want to be able to give it 110%. All the sponsors, all the people that volunteer and give me their times to help me out, be the best that I can. And I have to give them 110%. And I'm so proud that I have done that for, you know, for 20, it'll be 27 years next year. I started competing competitive in high school in 1990. So as a miler, many people see me as a marathoner, but I'm going to start with 1 mile at a time, to the 2 mile, to the 5K, 10K, and then eventually a marathon.
So last week when we were at Foot Locker, and you were, I think, second there back in 93, that's almost like, you know what, this next year is going to be my last year running as a professional in terms of the marathon. That is almost like a little bit of a flashback. Here I am back at Foot Locker, where really things sort of started. This is where everything started in high school, and now here I am, 30 some years later. You're looking at it going, oh my God, this is such a flashback to where it all began. And so much of your running was in that area, right, when you were growing up.
Absolutely. I went to San Diego High and to be able to run the Morley Field, famous Morley Field where the Foot Locker Cross Country Nationships are held. I used to do that for training. And my vision was, you know, with Coach Ramos one day to make it there. And
right.
It was fun to be there, and I didn't make it. I only made it my senior year. I missed my junior year by 3 seconds, so you get that hunger or drive, hey, I want to qualify again. And once you qualify, I end up getting third at the regionals, and very, very, very stacked field that year, both Western and then the Nationals, and then the who's of who's that year was there, and I end up getting second place to Adam Goucher.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just persevere, and, you know, my parents were there, and my principal from junior high was there, and, you know, a lot of good friends from my high school and teammates, and Mark Hauser was another guy that made it from St. San Agustin. You know, it was fun. It was a lot of fun, and I usually go there and revisit
yep.
and how far I have come. And in fact, I used to live literally like 600 meter, 800 meter meters away from Morley Field, Arizona Street. And first, my first introduction was right there to running. And coming here in the United States, I was a soccer player when I was in Italy, and my brother Fitzman and AK used to dribble the soccer. That 600-800 meter apartment to the field, and we played soccer, and we saw one day people were running. I'm like, what are they chasing? Where's the ball? And these people are crazy. And eventually, I end up being the crazy person to qualify for it. And obviously, running has changed my life. But at the same time, you know, to be there now to just reflect how much I have overcome and overcame obstacles, adversities, and to run from 5K race that was there now to full marathons, and it's been a blessing. But it hasn't been easy. It's been difficult and injuries and to have to overcome, and you know, some other things, sponsorship that I have to overcome, and many other things. But that's what life is, and I believe in myself and my team and my training, and they have been helping me so much, and the sponsors have been an amazing job to let me, like Skechers, give me the second life on my career.
Yes.
You know, because I went 8 months without a shoe contract, and it would have been easy at that point. And then when I had my pelvis search fracture in 2008, it would have been easy, but I really believe there was more. I love running. It's been amazing, amazing what it has done for me, and it would have been easy to just say, you know what, I'm as most people do, this is a serious injury, I'm going to give it up, or I don't have sponsorship, I'm going to give up, but I really believe in my God-given talent. I want to execute it to the best that I can and maximize the potential and opportunities, and I feel that time has come. And the only time I thought, even crossing thought, was when I won at UCLA the 4 NCAA title. I thought it would be, I could do this as a profession, but before that it was all academic first.
Right.
Make sure I get my diploma, work hard, and now to 20 years, you know, to be 20 years later, in 97, that was when I won NCAA titles. And next year, concluding my competitive career in the marathon, 20 years later, it went by quick, but it was tough with the marathon, ups and downs and the challenges. And, you know, there were so many people, I can't list them, that helped me, you know, the support, and including my wife for giving her career to be able to just see me that, you know, as an athlete, you can't get back in time to say, oh, let me wait 5 years, I'll come back to it now.
Right.
Now, moment, that zone, that time, that hour, and that's what competition is. And now I just hope to get across those two finish lines in Boston and New York of 2017 and represent the sport the best that I can, and represent all my sponsors and friends and family who have been supporting me over the years. And obviously, I have 3 daughters, so we're in Rio with me, and to be able to just, you know, cherish that moment with them one more time and one more year, and it'd be fun.
So when I look at the pivotal moments that people, it's funny because obviously you had so much success at 10,000, but people think of the three great moments are first taking the Olympic silver in 2004, and then New York in 2009, then obviously Boston in 2014. When you look back, are those the three moments that you cherish the most?
I mean, that's absolutely, those are the pinnacle of the marathon. But for me, there have been so many goals that I want to achieve. Those are the three big goals as a marathon runner. But to win my first CIF at Morley Field, or
yeah,
to win my state cross-country title, which I said as a freshman, I said I want to be the top freshman as a, you know, at Woodward Park, Fresno, and then by senior year maybe I could win. And when I won that, it was a blessing. And he like, I accomplished that. And then you want to be the fastest American in the mile or national champion, and you want to be able to do that. And you know, I wasn't a citizen, but I did those, and it's fun. And then winning that NCAA titles, cross country especially, you know, who milers, steeple chasers, 5K, 10K, to be able to win that in front of, I think there were 9 or 12 Olympians out of that field. And that was probably one of the proudest moments for me, just because that was my goal. I had metatarsal stress fracture that year, and Coach Bob Lawson wanted me to redshirt. I said, no way, I'm not going to redshirt. I know how it feels to win Pac-10, but I don't know how it feels NCAA, so let's put the goal for NCAA title. And I went and executed, and I was the happiest man. And then eventually, like you said, breaking the American record in the 10K, or making my first Olympic team, which as an athlete, that's the pinnacle of the sport, making your first Olympic team. That's the most memorable Olympic for me that has been. You know, it's not when I won medal, it's not when I will finish fourth, or, you know, this time was a little bit emotional with my daughters, but Sydney, you know, prior to 9/11, was the best experience ever, you know, doing the 10K. And then, you know, obviously doing marathons and, you know, getting second place in New York after winning a medal 70 days later, or winning my first New York, which was my dream. People talk about that, but also the trials when I went out 8 months without a shoe contract. I said, well, I'm going to prove people wrong. And you come back and win that. And, you know, in 2012, and you didn't make it 2008 Olympic Games, but you know down deep of who you are that says, you know, I belong in Beijing. I just had a wrong place, wrong time with an injury, but you know you could do it. But then you have to prove to everybody else, and then getting that moment is pretty pinnacle. You know? But when you have such a great success, like I've been fortunate to be the only person in the world to win the, you know, Olympic medal in Boston and New York, and to do it, especially Boston, the year after the bombing. I mean, it's hard to put in words, but that's, you know, and to be almost 2 weeks shy of 39th birthday when everybody and their mother has written you off.
Exactly. All they had to do is look at the PRs going in. And they're like, let's take a look at everybody's PRs. Okay, Mebs is 37th. Okay, let's we know we can sort of eliminate that guy. Race, watching that race, and just I've watched it now over and over again, and watching when you made a move and got away, and it was like all of a sudden it's like the pack just sort of sat there like, well, yeah, maybe Meb's doing some camera time here. We don't really know what's going on. They're sort of looking at each other and going, wait, we better go chase that guy. How stressful was that last mile? Because now after talking with you, when I watch you come, leading up to Boylston, just how you accelerated out of each turn, knowing that you needed the guy in second to basically give up. But he never did. How stressful was that coming down the last part, knowing how close he was?
You know, running teaches you a lot about yourself, about your competitors. You have to be a visionary, and you have to have tactics. That makes split-second decisions. You know, if I didn't make that decision to go early, you know, I would have won it.
Right.
So at that time, you know, it was tough to be able to say, hey, should I go, should I not? But when you believe in yourself, you know, maybe people are saying, oh, he's wearing Skechers and he's just going camera time. But for me, I just said, you know what? I am going to make you pay for it. If I get caught, let it be. But at the same time, I'm going to give all that I have. It was very emotional. It's what I've been visualizing in my training whenever I saw the Boston Strong or the B hat, or when the Red Sox won, put the trophy of the World Series at the finish line. And I said, you have a personal dialogue within yourself, and I want to do that for the runners. And, you know, God help me. And you know, before the start of the race, I tell Bob Larson, my mentor, I said, hey, don't worry, you're not going to see me until the last 5K. Hopefully I'll be in the mix. But you have to have instincts. You have to be able to make a decision when it counts and analyze your competitors. And when I went for it, I went for it. And Joseph Boyd, you know, who was up in the front, I'm like, I can't believe they let us go. But at that time, you know, people say, what do you think of? Well, what I'm thinking is, I can't believe they let me go. They're making the biggest mistake of their life. I'm an Olympic silver medalist, fourth place at the Olympic, and New York City Marathon champion. And, I'm going to make that gap bigger and see what happens at the end. Just keep pushing and pushing. And, you got to be ready. You got to take a risk. And I never took a risk like that before. But, when everything, the weight of the nation was on your back, you got to go ahead and do the best that you can. And I had the victims. I wasn't running by myself. I have the victim's name on my bib as a reminder. And, you want to honor them, and you want to be able to do it. Boston Street, something positive with the catastrophic of bombing was. And so you have this dialogue going with you during the race, and it hurts. It's painful. But at the same time, fortunately, I'm in the lead and be able to change Boston. And I'm just as the Boston Marathon, they just released that video, and you can see that the moment that I had. And to be able to just celebrate on Boston, everybody on their feet and chanting USA, USA, it was just an awesome time.
And the thing was, there was a point there where you had to throw up, but you don't want to show that weakness, right? You don't want to show that weakness to the guy in second place. You don't want him to see you. So you sort of have to camouflage while you're running along and puking at the same time.
Yeah, it's point to point. So, it's not like, let me just gather myself on this corner, and
yeah,
he can see you, he can target you. And in fact, if you are in the front in Boston, you have a disadvantage, not an advantage, in terms of your competitors, because whether it was next block, they can time you, whereas you just kind of take a quick glimpse in the back. And mile 23 is when I saw him. I pushed it so hard that mile 24 I was feeling like throwing up, but I just put my head up and swallow it in and go.
Right.
Because you can't go, and now it's getting close, and you can't go on the side and stop. If you stop for 3-4 seconds, that's how much you close. And as a runners, we know that the mental edge as a sport, that once you catch up to that crowd or that person, you have the mental edge over them. So I definitely didn't want to do that. So I just dug deeper, and the crowd was amazing. If it wasn't for the victim spirit, and if it wasn't for the crowd, and think about mechanic, quick feet, just having so many every second, every stride, and it was painful, but I paid for it towards the end. I had to drain my foot, 16, 17 times, I believe, and I was in excruciating pain, but you know what? Now that I look back, it was all worth it.
God. It was almost, when we were there at the Olympic trials this year in L.A., it was almost like you were running loops through your career. You come along the corner, there's your family. And you come around another corner, there's UCLA guys. And then there's some guys from high school and some San Diego people that almost feel that way. That, you know what? I'm running Olympic marathon trials, but, man, there's people I know on this entire course.
Oh, absolutely. To be in L.A., in hindsight, I was hoping to do the L.A. Marathon courses, and I would definitely have a big advantage just because I knew the course so many miles that I ran 7th in it, and
right,
Ocean Boulevard, and it would have been awesome. But to have the Quaternion course and to see some familiar faces, whether it's family, friends, teachers, teammates, classmates, and it was fun. And to have my the UCLA guys, unfortunately I have to run through the SC campus, but to have them there and chant USA, the A Club UCLA cheer, it was pretty awesome, and it gives you a spark of energy, and, to be able to just, qualify and to be 40 years old and making history, and to be able to just give hope for the next, the generation, that are marathoners and half marathoners. And, when you run like that, you're not running for yourself, but for the age category, or whether it is for your city, for your family, for your country to represent. And it was wonderful. Rio did not go as planned, but the trials was the best, great victory lap almost in my career. And even Rio, the international level, so many people have respected me over the years. And, whether it's from Chile, whether it's from Italy or Polish, or, people were cheering me on, and to be in Rio and people chanting USA and getting me to that finish line was pretty cool. So it was to have, as universal as Ryan is, and to be able to just have people, their countries on their chest, and whether you're passing them or they're passing you, to just kind of word of encouragement. It was the best victory lap, and hopefully I can just, do my best to stay healthy and be competitive. And that was not my competitive side, and, you know, even though it was a struggle to the finish line, but stopping seven times around 216, 41 years old. It was a pitfall at the end. It was pretty memorable, to say the least, but hopefully the next two will be a little quicker and a better place.
Well, and I know it, what's interesting, if you're retiring from baseball or something, you can sort of walk out to the plate and take one swing and go back and sit down. You're running two marathons, right? And knowing you, you're not doing these as, hey, I'm just going to wave to the crowd and run 230 or 240 or just sort of jog my way through this. You want to go out the way you've raced your entire career. So This is going to be a very interesting season, because you've got two major marathons with the best fields in the world. I mean, Galen Rupp is coming back and running Boston. And I mean, knowing you, I'm assuming your goals are, hey, listen, if I'm there, I don't go to the starting line, eat my lunch. I'm coming here to win the race.
Hey, just a great analogy for baseball, like you said, to come on bat, and I would love to hit that bat and run a home run. And
yep, exactly, exactly.
whether it means winning or finishing the podium or finishing the top 10, still will be an amazing career. I'm just fortunate enough to have the career that I have, and what I do the next two races won't in again to my legacy or
no.
Why not. Would it be nice? Absolutely. Frosting the kid for 5 years now.
Yeah, right.
And it's pretty delicious. And but I'm a competitive guy. I just hope to stay healthy and, you know, get to that front line healthy and be competitive. And the results hopefully will, you know, I would definitely savor it. It's going to be very, very emotional. I already interact with my fellow runners, and they're like, why are you retiring? I'm sad that you're retiring. But I tell them, me too, but my body be happier. And as you know, that, you know, we spend a lot of time yourself on Fest Island.
Yep.
And you see me do the work, and I'm going to hang it up, but it would be nice to hang it up in a nice way and very competitive and respectful time. But I hope it goes well and better than Rio did. But at the same time, people still love the push-ups, you know.
Exactly. And if you come back out to Fiesta Island, as soon as you get rid of this dumb marathon stuff, we can start riding the bike out at Fiesta Island and get Meb into his new career as a triathlete.
That would be fun. But like I said, I won't be able to agua jumping is probably the fastest way to get on the water for me than swimming. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll take a few lessons. I'm looking forward to my next chapter of life, just to be able to, you know, whether do I love my lift to go, and
yep,
if I want to get hard work, I got my lift to go, or if I want to go for charity or trying to do fast rides, and I don't mind jumping on road bike like we talked about before. And then, you know, it'll be fun to be able to just interact with a triathlon and give them advice on running, help them out. The sport has done an amazing thing to help me, and I'm in position now to help others, whether it's through the Med Foundation, Maintain X Ambassador Health Education Fitness, or to be able to mentor other athletes to finish a marathon or half marathon or help them qualify for Boston. And I guess I'm in that age category now that I have to earn qualify for Boston. You know, those 3 entries are the running out.
You know, when I look back at your career, Boston, New York, all that's amazing. But people forget back in 2004, Americans hadn't been relevant. We hadn't been relevant on the world stage in the Olympics and the marathon for a long time, not just in the Olympics, but anywhere. And here you go and win the silver and the Mammoth Track Club, and, you know, and Dina gets the bronze and Ryan Hall, and you guys sort of changed everything with getting people together and training together at Mammoth. It changed the perception of American running and changed the reality of American running. When you look back at that now, did you guys have any clue that might happen?
You know, the visionary on that was Bob Larson and Joe Vigil and running USA. They wanted to change something.
Right.
Yes, we had the vision for that. In fact, the Run USA T-shirt has taken on the world. You know, Run USA taken on the world. That was a vision. And to be able to, Dina getting the bronze, I got inspired. Me getting silver hopefully inspired her. And many, many generations, just like I went to high school, Dina went to high school, NCAA, and if they can do it, we can do it. And I think that's what I think rejuvenated the U.S. distance running. And it was my goal that I wrote. You can call it like a visionary, but I wrote to three companies at the time was Nike, Reebok, and Asics to give me the opportunity to help with the resurgence of U.S. distance running. And I wrote that in 1998 when I was finishing up at UCLA. I want to help in cross country, 5K, 10K, including the road races like marathon. And, you know, I had a vision for myself and to have Coach Bob Larson, Joe Vigil, and Dina as teams to be able to execute that plan. And bear in mind, it was 2001 it was founded. And till 3 years later, we broke, you know, she broke American record in many events. I broke American record in the 10K and the 20K.
Yep.
To be able to get a medal. It was a short time, very short time, but then people, you know, credits do what it's due, but I think we initiated it, and there's been many other successful programs now, and whether it's in Oregon or the Hamptons and
sure.
Minnesota and other things. So that, but that was the initial, and where is this mammoth place? You know, when we broke the American record, I did 10K in 2001, then 10 in 2002. It's like, where is this place? And definitely mammoth got on the map, and to be able to win two medals 2004 in the marathon, it wasn't Kenya, it wasn't Ethiopia, it wasn't Italy or China by any mean. It was the Mammoth Lakes Running USA, which is now Miami Track Club. But, you know, that's how that was initial.
I love that. And when I was over at your house, last year before, you got all these big trophies and pieces of the Boston finish line, but you showed me one trophy, this little teeny trophy that you said meant the most to you. And why is that?
Well, the trophy is, in fact, I was looking at a picture of it as I'm getting ready to do my motivational speaking. That's the image that my parents cherish because that was my oldest brother, Futsum, who came in here and then I stayed as a ninth grader. And we started in sixth grade and my other brother started in seventh. But he worked so hard that he got the most outstanding student of ninth graders. Imagine yourself now that you guys are listening, be in ninth grade in a foreign country and you didn't even know your ABCs and learning this and that. But through hard work and through the land of opportunity in the United States, we achieved some amazing things. And that's what my parents cherished the most. That's the first thing. Say, hey, see, if you work hard and persevere, this good thing can be rewarded to you for your achievement. And they used to display that on the top of the TV. You know, obviously, this was before flat screen TVs, where it used to be used as a mantle for a trophy.
Right.
For trophies.
So,
in fact, my brother gave me that little palm-sized trophy, and I cherish it. I should, as I do more speaking engagements, I'll be more than happy to share that with my fellow runners or other speaking engagement that I would be doing.
Love it. Hey, Meb, as always, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. We need to do another Tri Club of San Diego get together. Maybe we'll do a reunion of our Cinco de Mayo birthday Q&A.
My brother from another mother, we are separated at birth, but
somehow you got all the speed genes. Somehow you got all the stuff that goes fast and wins races, and I became this slow guy who just goes to Fiesta Island and goes in circles.
You're a Hall of Famer, and we both done very well, just separated at birth, and one of us learned how to swim, one of us learned how to run, and you did the ride on the bike and running. I just got running specialty.
Yeah, but you're pretty damn good.
It's a great honor to have speak with you, and thanks for everybody for listening, and we'd love to get together again in San Diego with this thing called
Cinco de Meb and Bob.
That's right.
Love it.
We should have some kind of race like that in Fiesta Island.
You know what? I think we will. We'll do something on Cinco de Meb and Bob, and we'll have a thing. We'll do like a duathlon, a run, bike, run or something.
Yeah.
I love that.
Before I get any older, I have to challenge those kids on their bikes and do those intervals or tempos that I do in Fiesta Island.
Yes. I love that. Meb Keflezighi has been our guest, a four-time Olympian, Olympic silver medalist, New York City Marathon champion, Boston Marathon champion. We are brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, VeloFix.com, RunCatalina.com, Catalina Marathon coming up on March 11th, 2017. That's the 40th anniversary. Challenge Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes, on Babbittville, and subscribe to our newsletter. And as always, endurance lives here.